AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. And by propane. Propane is the energy for everyone, especially farmers. Environmentally friendly propane can fuel most anything on the farm. See how at propane.com. The first day of spring earlier this week turned attention to the 2023 growing season, from frosted, newly emerged corn in the south to a still thick blanket of snow in the northern plains. Crop watchers are taking note of 2023 challenges, and it is time for this week's Farmer Forum.
Live from the bulging midsection of National Ag Week via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with a conversation with agronomist Dr. Lee Breeze from Central Ag Consulting. Then it's our Farmer Forum with panelists Dwayne Faber and Mark Putney. Right after the news, Margie Eckelkamp from The Scoop. I'm a handsome newsman, Davis Michelson, and now, here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lorre.
Man, that sounds like a full show to me, dude.
It's a big one.
Yes. Yeah. No doubt. Faber calling in from Washington. Mark Putney just hit me with some things that he wants to talk about. Very important items on Mark's list that we're going to need to get to today. And you know what? Here it is. A little bit of cloud, a little bit of gloom, a little bit of cooler temperatures. And it's only 41 degrees right now. Dude, yesterday afternoon I had to run some errands.
Mm-hmm.
It was like 58 degrees.
Nice.
That sounds great. It was roll the windows down and enjoy the breeze. No doubt.
Did you get a little Nickelback going while you had the windows open? Share that with the neighbors?
I didn't. I should have. Mm-hmm. I should have done that, and I did not. That is a big mistake on my part.
Well, there's a lot of spring and summer yet to come. Plenty of opportunities.
Right. That's right, and I'm looking forward to all of them. All of them, especially since I had a little bit of a taste of it last week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just makes you that much more anxious to get to it. How you doing today, buddy? Everything okay?
Everything is fantastic. Thanks for asking. 47 degrees and overcast, just sort of wet.
Yeah.
Not even really drizzly, just kind of. Meh,
meh. Yep. Yep.
But you know what? This is my favorite kind of weather, if I'm being honest. I really like it. This is my thing. Yeah.
Really?
Yep.
Oh.
Just, you know, not hot, not cold. You can wear a stylish jacket, maybe a pair of boots outside if you have to go out.
All right.
You know?
All right.
You stay in, you get creative, you get freaky with it, is what you do.
Yeah, no, that's
weird.
That's weird.
Okay, fair enough.
I wonder what Lee is wearing today up there in the cold north, because everybody is, you know, first day of spring's got everybody wondering about the 2023 growing season, and people are talking about the conditions. I'm not going to call them late. The conditions up in the northern plains. We'll talk to Dr. Lee coming up in just a moment about that as well. All right, man, let's get to it. What you got in the news?
Chip, the Fed will announce its decision on interest rates following its two-day monetary policy meeting this afternoon. Economists say there is an 80% chance the Fed will raise rates 25 basis points. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen said yesterday U.S. officials are prepared to take more actions, if needed, to ensure liquidity in the banking sector. She defended federal regulators' actions to protect the depositors of Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank, saying, quote, "our intervention was necessary to protect the broader U.S. banking system."
Okay, so there's a couple of things going on here. There's a wild card that we need to think about from those first two items. They could slow the process. The Fed could slow the process of quantitative tightening. I'm not saying get back to quantitative easing where they are adding to the money supply and liquidity, but just stop the process of tightening the money supply. That is an interesting take that is being considered right now. That's what I'm going to be listening for in the Powell press conference after the meeting.
In other economic news, the National Association of Realtors reports that sales of previously owned homes were up 14.5% in February. However, sales still down 22.6% on year ago.
Yeah, up from January, but down from February of last year. There's some headwinds in the market.
Well, this week's Moscow-based meetings between Chinese leader Xi Jinping and Russian President Vladimir Putin concluded today, leaving no question about Beijing's commitment to Russia amid its onslaught in Ukraine. The confab yielded no breakthrough in resolving the conflict. Both leaders emphasized that peace talks should be used to solve the Ukraine crisis, but Kyiv and the West say any peace agreement must include the withdrawal of Russian troops.
Did you see that the Japanese Prime Minister Kishida made a surprise visit to Ukraine?
Yes.
He met with Zelensky. It's interesting to see how China and Japan are positioning in this global conflict.
Well, and welcomed Zelensky to, is it G7 or G-something meeting over there in Japan.
A virtual appearance, yeah.
Yep, yep. Well, Ukraine won the backing of the International Monetary Fund for a $15.6 billion loan. The deal, which still needs to be ratified by the IMF's board, would last for 4 years. EPA Administrator Michael Regan testifies today, and the usual topics of the RFS and WOTUS rule will be among the likely topics addressed, besides the huge budget increase the White House wants for the agency in part to hire nearly 2,000 additional regulators. According to Bloomberg, a global biofuel boom is set to drive a shortage of vegetable oils used for cooking and increasingly to power trucks and planes, intensifying a debate over food versus fuel. Demand, I can't even say the words. Demand
the
is driving
Swedish
producers.
The chef came out there, didn't he?
He's got producers looking for sludge. That's a waste product for processing palm oil as feedstock. You know, I only bring it up because I know it's like, oh, come on with the food versus fuel.
Yeah,
but, you know, this is a debate that keeps coming up among people who really don't know what's up.
Yeah, exactly. It's like they woke up to an old story and they better get involved in it. Yep. All right, buddy. Thanks, man. Let's bring in Margie Eckelkamp, editor of The Scoop. Good morning, Margie.
Good morning, Chip.
All right, so some big news in transportation last week, the merger of the Canadian Pacific and Kansas City Southern Railroads. What's your take on this?
Yeah, so this is a big deal for our ag retailers, as, you know, related to supply chain and the railroads. Ag retailers rely on the flow for grain, fertilizer, et cetera, as well as they do have to endure some of the regulations around keeping those rail cars moving. So this was definitely of note. The ARA had STB Chairman Marty Oberman at its board meeting just 6 weeks ago, but before this decision. And as Chairman Oberman said then, they had not come to a decision. He couldn't share any more. But there is the decision. They have approved the merger. This is the first major merger that STB has approved in 25 years. I also find it interesting, Chip, this was the first press conference that Chairman Oberman hosted last week upon the decision that anyone could remember of its kind in memory. So a big deal as they're bringing transparency. It is important to note that the decision includes what is being called unprecedented, with a 7-year oversight period that the new merged railroads have to meet many conditions in the way that they're operating. Also, it was highlighted that they are expecting them to maintain gateways, which is where two railroads come together, and that they interchange traffic to get from one place to another so that they aren't slowing or impeding any kind of train traffic. So a lot to continue to watch here, Chip, but definitely big news with high impact for ag retail.
Exactly. You know, it's the first one in 25 years, and it just makes you wonder what took so long to make some progress. And it makes me wonder what might be coming next, if this is going to start a process of consolidation in the industry again. So gotta pay attention to it. Margie, thank you.
Thank you, Chip.
Learn more about that, www.thedailyscoop.com. We've got Dr. Lee Breeze up next.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
The 2023 Bracket Busters Challenge presented by Case IH is underway. Who's still in the game? Find out. Head to agweb.com now through April 3rd to check the leaderboard.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Glad that you are with us this morning. It is March 22nd, 2023. Spring has started, Davis. And because spring has started, we are turning our attention to growing conditions across the country.
I think it's sprung, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it has sprung.
I don't think spring starts. It springs. That just sounds weird.
Well, it does.
It's time for spring to spring. That's not right.
It springs into action. Yes.
Okay. All right.
It has sprung into action.
I'm feeling a little sprung myself right now, actually.
Yeah. Well, did you see that the down, I believe it was in Mississippi and Alabama, it got cold enough last week that, or not last week, I think it was over the weekend, there was some corn that was freshly emerged. It got tinged with a little bit of frost. So we've got those kinds of conditions. And then we've got the conditions that Dr. Lee Breeze is dealing with up in North Dakota. Dr. Breeze, it's good to talk with you again. Lee, how are you?
Good. Good to be back on. Appreciate talking with you guys.
All right. You guys still ice fishing up there?
Yeah. It's the bite hasn't been very good, but the ice is still solid.
Yeah, that's amazing to me. We've got open water down here in Northeast Iowa. There's no question about that. But when you look outside, you're in Jamestown, right?
That's correct.
Okay. When you look outside, what are you seeing right now?
Complete blanket of snow between 1 and 3 feet deep across everything.
That's like, call it anywhere from 3 to 9 inches of water that's got to move off of that ground, right?
Yeah, we got a lot of moisture sitting in some of this snow. Some of the snow, though, is kind of evaporated. It's in that, what you call, quote-unquote, dry snow phase.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
we still got to move a fair amount of water in a fairly short period of time.
Yep. So what are you, since it's March 22nd and you've got that thick blanket of snow up there, what are your thoughts? What are you thinking about?
So the one shining positive in this whole thing is that we don't have real deep frost in the soil. So our soils are not frozen very deep like they typically are. So we're kind of hoping that when the melt starts, that a lot of this moisture is going to be able to sink in rather than have to run off. And we could use a little recharge. We had a dry summer last year. So we're hoping there's some room in the soil and it can move in without flooding our rivers and roads. And just kind of depends on how fast the thaw comes.
Yeah. You know, in getting ready for the conversation, I took a look at the snow cover map. And then I thought, well, let's flip it over and take a look at the drought monitor. Your area is still in an area that is considered abnormally dry, according to the drought monitor. So, yeah, if you can capture some of that water, you got to do everything that you can to hold on to it, right?
Yeah, actually, I think it could be a good thing in the long run. We don't have a lot of frost. I think a lot of the moisture is going to soak in. It's going to give us a good start. And we might be a hair late, but we're working on getting ready for that.
Okay. We need to get to that point because I'm getting several have reached out to me this week saying, gosh, let's take a look at what's going on up in the Northern Plains because it's going to be a late start. It's going to be a late. How's that going to affect markets or the planting decisions? So give us a timeline. When does field work typically start?
Well, it varies across the state. My neighborhood, we typically get rolling the last week of April and get a fair amount done in May, early May. So that's kind of normal.
Okay. When does it start to feel like a late start?
After Easter hits. If after Easter hits and we got a lot of snow and a lot of stuff sitting around, then things get nerve-wracking.
Okay. All right. Excellent. So when does it get late for spring wheat planting?
That, well, middle of March is awful late for spring wheat. We like to get in as early as we can on that. You know, guys will, we did pretty good last year with some late planting. So I think guys will kind of keep with their planting intentions as long as fields are fit and ready to go.
Okay. So if they, if we get to the middle of April, do they keep planting spring wheat or do they look for something else?
Oh yeah, no, they'll keep rolling through April all the way probably till the 10th-ish of May and then reevaluate what looks good.
Okay. If they do, if spring wheat producers do have to make some adjustments there, what might they look at?
Honestly, if it starts getting late, I think guys are going to switch to corn if they've got the logistics for it.
Yep.
So, so wheat's a winner this year as far as economics looks, but corn is still ahead of it.
Okay. Oh, interesting. So there's still economic incentive to plant that wheat is to get the wheat crop in the ground, even though corn might be out in front of it. If you got wheat planted, you want to stick with it.
Right. If you can get stuff done early and get it in, then you still got some upside on that wheat.
Okay.
Plus the logistics of, you know, there's so many acres of corn that a farm can run. So some of it runs into just how many acres they can run.
Right. Right. Okay. On corn, when does corn planting get late?
20th to the 25th in my neighborhood. The further north you go, the earlier that date moves in. Okay. So somewhere in that range is starting to get late. Guys will go all the way to the first, or as we like to call it, the 33rd of May. you know, they'll go into some of that early June, but then it gets to be an issue.
Okay. And, you know, the last one I'm going to ask you about is soybeans. When does it get late to plant soybeans?
4th of July.
Okay. All right. So
we can go a long time with soybeans.
Yep. So the bottom line. The bottom line is, yeah, you've got a lot of issues that are a challenge right now, but there is still time to get things fit and get the planned crop mix in the ground, right?
Absolutely. And we're going to hang on to our selected varieties and our selected crops as long as we can. Yeah, and these guys are pretty amazing, Chip. They can get a lot done in a very short period of time.
Absolutely, absolutely. Let's talk about some of the guys that you're talking with. What decisions are they making right now for the year ahead?
All right, so we're making sure we have our priorities figured out. The planting priorities are number ones, and then some pre-emerge herbicide sprays are number two, and then we're actually shifting our fertilizer applications for like corn as to a number three priority. Granted, we need that fertilizer on, but we got some time there to do it after planting, so we're going to focus on getting the planting and that early spraying done.
Okay. All right. Perfect. Perfect. So I've talked to a couple of other agronomists and they've come out of winter meetings this year, kind of fired up about new items, new production efforts, techniques, and so on. Did you learn anything at the winter meetings this year that's got you fired up?
Wow. That's a good question. You know, I'm really looking forward to some of these, the potential for some of these new biologicals, but I think we've really got to place them in the right place. So we've seen hit and miss efforts on this. And I think part of it is some of our really good ground is already benefiting from native biologicals, but then we've got some ground that's just not quite as good, but could be better. And maybe that's a place to try some of it. But I think we haven't quite figured out the placement just yet.
Yeah. You know, that's exactly the topic that I've got some other questions that I wanted to follow up on there on the biologicals, but you went there as well. I mean, everywhere that I go right now, Lee, people are asking and wondering about the biologicals and they're just wondering if they're for real or not. They're very intriguing. Some of the early results, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. But, you know, the difference is we're used to like a physical or chemical thing that has stability in different weather conditions.
Yep.
I think this is really the challenge of the biologicals. You give it this cold weather, you give it a flooding event. And if this is an alive, breathing organism, you can drown it, you can freeze it, you can kill it with heat. So I think that's part of what we're seeing with the variable results.
All right. All right. Cover crops, are they catching on up in your area?
There's momentum.
Okay.
As a mainstream, probably not yet. When we've had some difficult planting seasons like we're approaching now, we maybe can get most of the field and some of that field's going to be underwater. then that's where I'm seeing more cover crops come in later into those areas, just as a weed fighting tool and a water management tool. And it's those have been working really well.
All right, very good. The crush capacity, I'm going to call it oilseed crush capacity, not just soybean crush capacity that's coming into your area. Is it going to create some challenges in the years ahead, do you think?
I would like to see livestock follow in suit with it, but we're having trouble getting that going. So, you know, with all of the byproduct, I want to see some of that. I'm concerned about, you know, what it's going to do to our crop mix. It's going to be pretty strong on the oil seeds in our production because of the local availability. So that could hurt our rotation efforts.
Yeah. Yeah. That's absolutely one of the things that I'm thinking about as I think not months ahead, but years ahead, and some of the challenges that you guys are going to be facing up there. Lee, great job. You laid it all out there, and we've got that timeline in front of us. Yes, we've got some challenges in the Northern Plains, but guys, there is still time to get this taken care of. Dr. Lee Breeze, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right, Dr. Lee Breeze, Central Ag Consulting out of Jamestown, North Dakota. We are going to get the Farmer Forum started. You know what? We just did a nice job on the Northern Plains expectations. We'll find out what crop conditions are like in Northeast Iowa and Washington State next.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farm incentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Geez, Beej, I look at the losses in the soy complex, and they've kind of got me scratching my head this morning. What's going on there?
Yeah, just more technical breakdown here, Chip. You know, I guess if you want to put a fundamental reason on it, Argentina got some pretty heavy rains through central areas of the country. But that's, let's be honest, it's going to be too late for much of the crop down there. So only the late maturing soybeans will benefit from those rains. So just more fun selling and liquidation pressure here. And you know, soybeans double digit losses, the meal market $5 to $7 lower in the front end of the market. Soy oil selling off heavily as well.
Okay. Corn market is trying. It's trying to erase the losses.
Well, we had another daily export sale to China. So China is using this the price break to be aggressive buyer. Now more than 2.4 million tons and 96 million bushels of corn that's been purchased by China. Old crop corn over the past week, basically, here. So that's supporting the front end of the market. New crop futures are being hit the hardest today in the corn market.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've got the wheat market under pressure today with some double-digit losses. But take us over to the livestock trade. Lots of negative numbers there.
Yeah, just more negativity. And starting the hog market, just can't get out of its own way and moderate to sharp losses there. So we continue to sell off. But really just trader pessimism right now with both the front end of the hog market and the cattle market trading below the respective cash markets. And so really pessimistic. And that ties back to the macroeconomic concerns.
Yeah, and the hogs are on the lows of the day right now. Thanks, Brian. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Hey.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. I don't know what you're thinking! So call us at 855-4-TALK-AG and tell us what's on your mind.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Thank you so much for joining us. Great conversation there with Dr. Lee Breeze up in North Dakota. It sets the stage for a conversation on the Farmer Forum. Let's bring in Mark Putney from Northeast Iowa. Mark, welcome back to AgriTalk, man. How are you?
I'm good, Chip. Thanks. Thanks for having me. Great to talk again here.
You bet. You bet. Love that you're here. Dwayne Faber out in Washington State. Dwayne Faber, welcome back, man.
Good morning, Chip. Thanks for having me on.
I'm glad that you are here. So let's start with you, Dwayne. What's the weather like? What are you dealing with up there here in the middle of National Ag Week?
You bet. So today was a picture perfect day, a Chamber of Commerce day. It was a hair above freezing. We got clear blue skies, and there's still snow on the foothills, on the mountains out here, and yet things are starting to perk up. So we're getting some cow manure back out on the fields and starting a little bit of that. It's still early for turning dirt, but as far as the weather story, it's probably to the south of us in California as they continue to get hammered, as we're seeing even a lot of our precipitation head down to California. And yeah, God knows they need it down there. Not sure that they're keeping all of it, but it's certainly been quite the weather event down in California.
Yeah, it certainly is. Matter of fact, we're going to talk with a representative from Milk Producers Council down in California. We're going to talk with them tomorrow about some of the issues that they're dealing with. But it sounds like, you know, it's almost like your weather has shifted to the south for this time of the year, because typically you'd be getting rain pretty much every day, wouldn't you, Dwayne?
Yeah, certainly. And we have been getting rain. I think we are a hair below normal. And so some of that seems to be heading that direction, which always scares us a little bit. We had a spring last year where it got nice, and then it proceeded to rain for all the month of May and all the month of June. And we had corn in the ground that was trying to die on us. And was a little scary. So we kind of prefer to see our winter during winter months and hope that we don't get a false winter here.
Yep. Yeah. How the cows liking the weather? Are they producing like they ought to?
They are. Yeah. No, for our area, it's been really good. Our area is really conducive to milk production. We tend to not get the extreme swings in barometric pressure, nor the high temperatures, nor the super low temperatures. So cows tend to do really well in the Pacific Northwest.
Yep. Certainly do. All right. Mark Putney here in Northeast Iowa. Mark, it's a little muddy out there right now. I mean, but it the frost is out of the ground, and any moisture that we're getting up here is going to the good, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, I was looking at the drought monitor, and it's really has really improved, and so yeah, we welcome all that moisture to fill up that that subsoil zone. And you know, it's we get all excited here coming into spring, and you know, we start to get those nice warm days, and it's, man, like you just want to go jump in the tractor and turn some dirt. But you know, there we've got probably 20-30 days here before we get real excited about getting the planters rolling. So my earliest planting date was April 21st, and that was still had some frost on it, in the next week there coming into May. So, you know, it's a good time just to sit back, get everything ready to go. And then when it is fit, then we'll be ready to go.
Yep. Have you got calves on the ground?
Yeah. So my cows are mostly fall, but, actually down at Dad's. We've got some heifers that we're calving in. And so, I'm doing some cow sitting, down here, and so dealing with some mud there, but you know, it's warm and that makes a big difference. If you can get those calves going, you know, they're pretty resilient, but
yeah,
been good.
Yep. They certainly are. Okay. So yesterday was National Ag Day, National Think a Farmer Day. This is National Ag Week, across the country. Dwayne, what's your attitude about National Ag Day and National Ag Week and the Thank the Farmer movement and stuff like that?
Boy, I tend to be a little bit cynical on it myself personally. I mean, I always view farming as a means to support my family. And yet we need to go out there and share our story and tell people what we're doing. And part of that is shining a light on agriculture and having a week and having a day. And yet we got to be careful we don't get caught up in, you know, farming is everything, right? If I mean, to me, it's my faith comes first, my family comes first. And if I had to grab a lunch pail and work in the coal mines, then that there's honor and dignity and integrity in that too, right?
Absolutely.
And so we have to be careful we don't turn it into something larger than it is. I mean, it's obviously super wholesome. It's rewarding to provide food for other people. And yet we have to keep it in perspective that at the end of the day, even agriculture, it's a means to serve our families and to serve our communities and to serve our maker.
Yeah. Good for you. Well put. And Mark, for you, same question to you, but it's got to have a little bit of a different feel to it when you're in the direct to consumer business, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's all about telling your story. And so, you know, I totally agree that, you know, there's a lot of things that we can do in life and having our priorities in order is very important. But yeah, consumers want to know, they're so far removed from the farm that they want to know who we are and what we do and do our values align with their values. And sometimes, you know, we can get too focused on trying to tell them what we do instead of understanding like where they're coming from and then provide them the opportunity to engage with us. And that, you know, there's a great means of doing that on social media now. But you know, with our company Chop Local, you know, you can go there. We're an online meat marketplace that farmers can sell on, and the consumer can come in and buy pretty much anything that they want to that aligns with their values. And so, yep. You know, we're seeing a lot of really good engagement from the consumer back to the farm. And so I think those are, you know, I think the more that we can, as agriculture, and this is every sector of agriculture, the more that we can tell the public what we do, the more trust that we're going to get. So,
I think that great points, Mark. One of the things that's driving me crazy on social media right now is the idea that if you're buying at a big box like Costco or Walmart or any of the big grocery store chains, that the product that you're getting from that meat case cannot be nearly as good as the product that you are buying direct from a producer. And it's the tearing down of one sector of the supply chain to build up your sector of the supply chain. And not everybody's got access to that, guys.
Dwayne,
what's your take on this?
I can see both sides of it, right? Because you've got, I mean, every beer company goes out and says, well, we've got the coldest filtered water. We've got this 7-step process. So we separate and differentiate ourselves from the competitors, right? And it's going to be no different in ag marketing too. The one that gets me is sitting there saying that grass-fed beef is so much better.
Yeah.
Right. And that seems to be a common misconception. And you look at a grass-fed steak and it's not marbled at all. And yet at the same time, hey, there's scientific research that says, you know, conjugated linoleic acids have health benefits, and cows that are finished on pasture tend to have higher levels of these CLAs, right?
Yep.
And so we still have to allow room for people to market their products. And I mean, people should be able to market their products in ways that they see fit without tearing somebody else down.
Exactly.
And yeah, we have to be careful. We don't sit there and disparage someone, but also allow room for separation and be okay with it. Right. Like I'm a conventional farmer.
Yes.
If somebody wants to be organic, and I mean, a lot of organic producers do it for green reasons to make money, and so be it, right? Like you found somebody willing to pay you a higher price for your product and wants you to make a product in a specific manner, then that's fine. I'm okay with it, right? But I do get upset when they sit there and disparage us. There's a difference between differentiating and disparaging.
Yes, Mark,
absolutely. And we're very, you know, our Chop Local is very, very adamant that we will not allow disparaging marketing within, you know, from farmer to farmer. And because, you know, the market is big enough for everybody. And so if you are a producer, if you're a cattle producer, like I talked to a gentleman yesterday in New York that he's got Piedmontese, and that's a different product than an Angus Simmental cross, you know, steer in Iowa. You know, that's a different product. And so there's a different consumer for that. And there's a different market. It's no different than some of, we have Mangalese pork, which is like the Wagyu of pork. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a different market. You're not going to sell those through JBS. They're not going to buy them. And so, the market is big enough for everybody. And we just need to, allow the consumer to use their food dollars to support whatever they're going to support. And the ones that are going to make it are going to be the ones that market, and supply those. So, yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. And hey, if that grass-fed steak is your thing, eat more beef. Eat more grass-fed beef. It's all good. I'll probably stick with the corn-fed beef. Dwayne Faber, Mark Putney on the Farmer Forum.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
AgriTalk is brought to you by the Mosaic Company, the leaders in advanced crop nutrition.
Welcome back to the Farmer Forum here on AgriTalk. I'm Chip Flory. Glad that you are with us. We've got Dwayne Faber from Washington State, Mark Putney from Iowa. Hey guys, some labeling issues are back in the news, and the product of U.S. labeling. Mark, your take on where we stand right now.
So right now it's in a in the USDA is there's a comment period that is kind of open. I think it's to May 12th if I read that right.
Okay.
And so, you know, this the Grassley Fisher bill was reintroduced by Grassley. We don't think it's going to go anywhere. It's a tough bill, and there's a lot of resistance from the southern cattle feeders. It's one of those things where it may just like it may drop, and it may, you know, we don't know, but we don't see that has a lot of legs on it. But the product in the U.S. is really different than, you know, there's been this conversation about M-Cool and how that all works. When it comes down to product of the U.S., there's really that's a consumer, fraud almost conversation. Like,
yep.
We're bringing things in. FSIS has not updated their kind of mode of operation for many years. And so we're bringing product in, we're salting it, we're doing, you know, certain things to it, and we're repackaging it and then throwing a product U.S. label on it.
Right.
And it's coming from out of country. And so, you know, we really support that, you know, we need to have this label that is born bred, you know, in the United States. There's a lot of conversation here and it can get controversial. My biggest thing is that it from a consumer standpoint, it just needs to be transparent. And that's what we really desire. And that's going to benefit all cattle producers.
Exactly. Dwayne, I mean, it's got to be right. If it says product of USA, it needs to be a product of the USA. Is that your take?
Absolutely. Yeah. Consumers deserve to know what they're buying, what they're paying for. What's interesting is in the U.S., we actually import MPC 80s, which is basically a milk protein slurry that gets added to powders and basically a lot of dairy products to increase their end output. Right. And that's bought from foreign companies. Right. And we actually haven't even touched that in the dairy industry, and the beef industry is certainly ahead of us on that. And I agree. I mean, if you're going to put a label of Made in the USA in there, it has to come from the U.S.
Okay. All right. Let's get to some local issues. I want to start with Dwayne. Dwayne, anything going on up there in Washington State that the rest of us need to know about?
Yeah. So I'm on the Dairy Federation. We fought a bill in Olympia. They basically wanted to have a 270-foot buffer along every stream and creek in Washington. And that got soundly defeated. And so we were thankful for that. We're trying to come up with a workable solution between local tribes and local government. But it's a land grab, right? And even out here with 70 inches of rain a year, water is a political football that has value. And it's turning into a fight even here in our area. And these are fights that are probably going to continue to go across the U.S. and something that farmers and everyone in agriculture need to be aware of. We recently put in a 50-cent cap and trade tax on all fuel. Red dye was exempt from that. And there's a whole bunch of money now being set aside. So we're actually going to probably follow in the footsteps of California. There's going to be a lot of funds available for dairy producers to try and reduce carbon footprint. And while I'm not a big believer in it, dairy took about, 2.5% of the cap and trade dollars and contributed 29% of the reduction of greenhouse gas emissions in California. And so dairy is kind of viewed as the savior. We've been the kicking dog for a long time. But in this particular scope, we're coming to the table with a whole bunch of solutions, and we're getting meetings with purple-haired legislators that would never give us time of day.
Yeah. So. Good. Okay. Mark, what are you focused on?
I think the most important thing that's going on right now in the Iowa legislature is a bill that passed out of the Senate file 516, and it talks about state ownership and for, you know, DNR lands. Basically limiting some of the ability to purchase more land and putting more dollars into the management and betterment of the lands that they already own. Okay. This is a very important topic for cattle producers in particular, because a lot of those, you know, marginal lands are pasture, great pasture lands, and great working lands that that cattle producers depend on, and specifically cattle producers like me, who are younger and a little shorter in the tooth, and really depend on those pasture lands to increase our cow herd, we've got to have that income to be on the farm. And so really important. What we don't want to have happen, and this has happened so many times, and there's so many, you know, just horrible stories about where, you know, some group comes in, a kind of a quasi governmental group comes in, and I'm not going to name any because a quasi governmental group comes in, buys the land from an elderly, you know, landowner, and then they hold it in their little trust fund for a year or whatever until they can get a grant to purchase that land, and then it goes to the DNR, and then it grows up in shrubs and trees, and it's unusable, and right. So like, and it comes off the tax roll, and so we've got to reset the button on this thing and
do a better
really
job of managing those lands. Exactly.
Those lands, absolutely.
Yep, yep. You guys were great. Have a great spring. Be safe, and we'll talk again soon. Dwayne Faber, thanks, buddy.
Be well, guys.
You bet. Mark Putney, good to talk with you again, Mark.
Yes, thank you. Hey, last thing is reset your farm's fire alarms, farm safety, and farm succession.
Amen to that. Good stuff. Hey, come back this afternoon. Conversation with Steve Georgie, Allendale Inc., right here on AgriTalk.